to the ribcage, exposing it to the air. Just a few yards away lay J.B. Dix, the armorer. His eyes stared sightlessly from behind his wire-framed spectacles. His beloved fedora lay a few feet from his chilled corpse. His close-cropped hair was soaked with blood from a deep gash across his forehead. His head had been severed from his shoulders, bloodied veins and vertebrae still hanging from the remains of his body, which lay only a few inches away. Jack knew that whatever had taken out the armorer had been swift. JB was a wiry and tough fighter, with lightning reflexes, yet his Uzi was still strapped across his body. His M4000 Smith & Wesson scattergun with its deadly load of barbed metal flechettes still across his back, the stock poking awkwardly from behind the fallen corpse. The technoknife that he used in close combat was still sheathed, and the vast amounts of ammunition and grenades that he carried about his person and in the canvas bag that lay to one side of him were untouched. Moving farther over the veldt, Lauren came across the third of the chills. A youth on the cusp of adolescence, with a strong jawline and a mop of thick black curly hair. His blaster, a 9mm Browning high power, was still in an outstretched hand. Even at this distance, Jack could smell the cordite where the blaster had been discharged. But not enough to save the boy, who'd been hit 8 times across the torso with shells that looked from the entry wounds to have been high caliber. The front of the boy's clothing was soaked in blood. Jack didn't bother to turn the corpse over. He knew that such a number of high-caliber entry wounds would probably have left exit wounds that had taken away more than half the boy's backbone and flesh. There were also 2 further entry wounds, one on each knee. It suggested he'd been brought down, and then savagely chilled when he had used up all his ammo. The boy was Jack's friend, Dean Cotter. Moving soundlessly across the veldt, Jack came to the next chill. A woman, voluptuously curved with a shock of long Titian hair that had curled around her skull and neck, framing the contorted agony of her death throes, now frozen on her once beautiful face. The hair had been sentient, curling close to her when danger beckoned, a visible sign of her muti heritage, fostered in her home ville, Harmony. The warning had obviously not been quick enough, as her body had been hacked into ribbons by multiple blade wounds. Fragments of bloodied cloth merged with flayed flesh, white bone showing through. The earth around her was stained dark with her blood. Her .38 caliber Smith & Wesson 640 revolver lay by her side, unfired. She had once been Christy Roth, one of Jack's traveling companions and lover of Ryan Cotter, the leader of their group. Now she was Carrion. With dreadful inevitability, Jack trod into the longer grass, where the last 2 corpses were concealed, their positions notable only by the gaps they created in the wall of green. The first was an older version of Dean, taller, harder, with more finely honed muscles. Over 6 feet tall, he lay stretched to his full length, his throat an open wound. One startling blue eye stared sightlessly to the sky, and where the other eye should have been, there was a patch covering an empty socket, the long, puckered scar from that socket running the length of his cheek, distorting the rugged features. About his person was a Sig Sauer blaster, a Steyr rifle, and a razor-honed panga that was still sheathed to his thigh. Apart from the gaping wound at his throat, there was little sign of a struggle. The chill had come quick and fast. Not so to the last member of the party, whom Lauren found a few yards to his left. Doc Tanner was a thin, scrawny man. He looked old and weather-beaten, with a mane of gray-white hair that framed a lined face. Yet Doc was only somewhere in his mid-30s, his apparent age the result of an incredible experiment. Tanner was the only successful subject of a pre-dark project known as Operation Kronos. Part of the totality concept with which the old USA had prepared itself for the all-out new cost that had led to the formation of the Deathlands. Theophilus Algernon Tanner had been a family man and academic, snatched at random from his own time period in the 1880s and pulled through the 1990s by the whitecoat scientists of Kronos. He'd been so obstreperous that the whitecoats, tiring of him, had catapulted him forward in time, inadvertently saving his life, albeit plunging him into what was a living hell until he was rescued by Ryan Cotter. The immense stresses on the man's body and mind had aged him physically and made his grasp on sanity fragile. Yet Doc somehow managed to keep himself together at crucial moments and made it through the dangers. Until now. Doc's death was the worst of all. He had put up a fight, as there was still the smell of burnt powder about the ancient Lamar percussion pistol he favored, and both the shot and ball barrels had been discharged. The gun lay a few feet to his left, and his left hand still clutched the unsheathed sword stick with the silver lion's head that also supported him as a walking stick in his weaker moments. Dried blood coated the glinting blade. Apparently, Doc had had the fight of his life. His tongue and eyes bulged vilely from his purpled face, the color distorted, as were his features, by the length of chain that was around his neck. Rusted metal with small links, it was double-wrapped and had been pulled tight. So tight it had cut into his throat and left him with some of the links lodged under his flesh. The vertebrae had been crushed, and his head had been pulled to a grotesque angle by the tension on the chain. Blood seeped from between the links. His body had been cleaved at the waist. Doc's torso had been detached from his legs, the two halves lying within inches of each other. The lack of blood told the albino that the butchery had taken place after Doc had already been chilled. Jack turned and walked away from the carnage. He didn't look back. He didn't think about where he was going. He simply began walking and kept going. He just wanted to get away. He didn't understand how he'd gotten there, or why he could remember nothing of the fight. He didn't care. Distracted from his habitual vigilance, Jack was taken completely off guard. The albino was pitched forward, head over heels, by a sudden and heavy impact in the small of his back. Recovering quickly, he relaxed his body into the momentum of the impact and turned a sudden fall into a roll that brought him back onto his feet, crouched around toward the source of the attack. Part of his mind raced, running a series of instinctive mental checks. He could feel no blood down his back, no sharp internal pain, no uneasy sensation in the areas of his vital organs. He ached like hell in the pit of his back, but it was purely the force of the blow. He didn't waste time wondering what had attacked him. Instead, he focused simply on locating the enemy so that he could attack it. This was easy, as his enemy made no attempt to disguise himself. Jack drew his .357 Magnum Colt Python blaster with one hand and palmed a leaf-bladed knife with the other.
Holy shit!
The man in front of him stood 8 feet tall, with broad, heavily muscled shoulders that rippled under the bright yellow one-piece bodysuit. It was made of a material that the teen recognized from the raiding party the companions had encountered some time back on the road to the villes of Sontvogel and Raw, when they tangled with the Sun Children cult. The raiding party with the laser blasters had appeared suddenly, indulged in a brief firefight, and then disappeared. Ryan believed them to be part of the Illuminated Ones, a secret society from pre-dark times that had somehow survived and might hold secrets that could lead them to a peaceful, tranquil land of legend. The giant had a laser blaster slung on a strap over his shoulder, but he didn't seem inclined to use it. Instead, he held a chunk of rock in the vast paw of his right hand, which he swung loosely and easily at waist level. The heavily muscled shoulders and arms tapered to a comparatively thin waist, with thighs that looked thick and strong, but considerably less so than the upper torso. They circled slowly, the giant's red face shiny with sweat in the sun, eyes glinting with bloodlust, and lips drawn back over his strong white teeth in a leer that bespoke his intent only too well. He shuffled around in a wide circle, large feet crunching and rustling in the undergrowth. The giant's shiny one-piece costume shimmered in the sun. Its tight fit and the kind of material it was inadvertently telegraphed his movements to Jack. With a deft and wickedly fast flick of his thick wrist, the giant sent the rock skimming through the air toward Jack's head. But the wiry albino quickly executed a roll to bring himself out of the sideways leap that had carried him out of the rock's flight path. Jack struck a stone in the earth at the apex of his shoulder joint. He felt a sudden jarring down his left arm as the nerve caught fire and then went dead.
Fuck!
By the time the word had escaped his lips, he was up on his feet again, trying to hide the temporary disability from his opponent. The bloodless sneer turned to a snarl as the giant followed Jack's path. Missing with the stone and finding that his opponent was faster than he'd imagined had only angered the brute. The giant sprung at the albino teen, using all the power in his thighs and calves to propel himself through the air. Jack swung himself to one side, unwilling to play the odds on another jarring blow from the ground. He spun away from the giant's flight path, enough to prevent the man driving him into the ground, but not enough to stop a glancing blow that took his spin into an uncontrolled tumble. Even that glancing blow, hitting him just below his injured shoulder, was hard enough to drive the air from Jack's body and make his head reel. He hit the ground on his back, explosions of light and dark passing rapidly before his eyes. His head hit soil that no longer seemed so soft and yielding. The giant also landed heavily, which bought Jack a little time. Expecting his own move to take out the small albino, the giant had been unprepared for Jack's swift movement and crashed.